Did you say you watched? You said you watched my video twice.
Yeah, I did. The Spider-Man Lotus. I watched it. If you want to get technical, I watched it 2.5 times.
2.5, because you watched the first half when I sent you that. That's right.
And then I watched it in full when it dropped. And then I watched it again while washing the dishes.
Hell yeah. Thanks, dude.
It's a good video. I haven't even seen the movie. I've only seen like 20 to 30 minutes of the movie, something like that. But this is a good video.
I'm really proud of how that video came out. I got to reread some of my favorite Spider-Man stories for it, which is cool. I'm really annoyed at some of the comments I get who are just like mad that I call it the racist Spider-Man fan film. Because they're like, the fan film's not racist. The fan film's not racist. We can't take you seriously if you're just jumping on
it's
the bandwagon.
It's a joke, you asshole.
And also, it's fucking known as racist Spider-Man. It's like
that's the meme.
That is what the meme, more people know it as racist Spider-Man than they do Spider-Man Lotus. It's marketing 101. If I call it Spider-Man Lotus, the people who've heard of Spider-Man Lotus will click on it. If I call it racist Spider-Man, the people who have heard of Spider-Man Lotus and the people who've only vaguely heard about this racist Spider-Man thing will click on it.
That's right.
It's just so profoundly stupid that people are trying to like frame this as some sort of moral failing on my part. They care more about the fucking title, me calling it racist Spider-Man fan film, than about the racism that
use your brains.
It's but I'm really proud of that video. I think it turned out really good. It's like performing fine. I was a little discouraged because Cosmonaut Marcus put out a video that fucking trended about Spider-Man Lotus, and it feels like as soon as that hit, my views like tanked. And I'm like, man, his video is very funny and it's like a good video. But I think my criticism is a lot better. No disrespect. It's a great video. It's a lot funnier than mine. But I think I dive deeper into the comic book source material that they're adapting. And I think I break down why it doesn't function well as a movie a little bit better than he does. And so I was just a little bummed that like 500,000 views he got in a day, and I'm like, oh, I'm almost gonna hit 100,000. We'll see how it
goes. Yeah. I guess
oh well. Shout out to Cosmonaut Marcus. He's funny. He's a good creator.
This is a call to action for the audience. If you haven't seen that video, I highly recommend.
If you like Spider-Man, but and don't like racism,
or flip flop. If you like racism but don't like Spider-Man, well, I got a video for you.
Oh my god! It was fun to do. It's the only time I've ever ventured into fan content, and it's just because it was such a big thing that you know what? And it's also like a full movie. It felt like I talk about Spider-Man enough. That's worth doing. And I'm really proud of it. I think it's one of my, I think my last two Spider-Man videos are two of my best videos I've ever done. That and the 1967 Spider-Man video, which of course are doing the worst out of any of my Spider-Man videos. But, you know, whatever.
It's too good.
Whatever. I think they always pick up eventually. Like I did that one. Mm-hmm. I did that one earlier in the year about the MTV Spider-Man show. And that one, like compared to all my other retrospectives, was like, it like barely got to 100,000 views, and then out of nowhere surged. It's at like 630,000 views.
Right.
So I'm like, maybe these will pick up eventually.
I think about is remember when you doing when No Way Home like just came out and you did the Why I Love Spot it first came out.
That
from what I remember
miserably, like truly one of the worst flops on my channel. In like the 2 years prior to that. Yeah, and it was like half expected because it was content that I had never talked about before. I was like, well, I've never talked about Spider-Man. It's a little bit of a risk. But it seriously did like 10,000 in a week, which is like, that's like a bad day for me now.
Right.
Like, and then it just like luckily hit the right algorithms. And you know, when you talk about something new that does tend to happen. Like if it's something that your audience isn't used to you talking about, then they're not going to click it immediately. But sometimes the YouTube algorithm will find the audience that will click that, and it won't come until later. It'll be like, oh, this video is meant for these people. And so that's what happened with that one. And that one blew up. Honestly, almost every Spider-Man retrospective I've done starts slower than any of my other kinds of videos,
yeah,
but long term just do so well, which is great. But it's so hard to judge how they're gonna do. I'm like, okay, it's starting good. Like the Spider-Man 67 video started stronger than any of my other retrospectives and then just tapered off. And so like it's weird. I don't know. It's YouTube's a weird beast. But yeah, go watch Racist Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's called Spider-Man Lotus. It's basically a student film, so prepare yourself for that.
I think 2 hours. It's 2 hours.
It's actually really like an hour 45, and then the credits are the slowest credit roll you've ever seen in your life.
Whoa!
I think he wanted it to say yeah, over
solid,
2 hours.
That's solid too.
Yeah, which I understand. It makes it feel substantial.
And I mean, what is there? Is there a Spider-Man movie that's not 2 hours? I mean, okay, well, there is. But you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of regular, right?
I don't know if there is.
Spider-Verse, the first one isn't, right? That's not 2 hours.
No, I think it's 2 hours.
Is it? Whoa, am I right then?
I think everyone's at least 2 hours. Okay, sorry. Into the Spider-Verse is an hour 56. I think it's probably the shortest one. But I'm pretty sure all three Raimis are over 2 hours. I'm pretty sure both Amazings are over 2 hours. And I'm pretty sure all three home trilogies are over 2 hours.
Love to the Amazing Spider-Man movies because I love them. I am 1,000% sure they're over 2 hours. I am 1,000% sure.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah, man, I don't know. I got such love for the Amazing Spider-Man movies, even though I like think they are among the worst Spider-Man movies. I love them. I think I can watch them and I'm critical of them. I'm more critical of those movies than any other Spider-Man movies or than most other Spider-Man movies. And I still like, I feel like in the last few years, I've rewatched those more than other Spider-Man. Well, I've rewatched Into the Spider-Verse the most in the last few years. But I don't know. Leading up to No Way Home, I rewatched all of them. And Amazing Spider-Man, I ended up rewatching both of those multiple times after No Way Home came out. And
get some of that Andy
Garth.
I watched it.
Like there was a lot of friends who had never seen it. And because of No Way Home, they were interested. I was like, let's watch it. Okay. And I don't know. I think those movies have problems, but I think that the actors and the characters and the romance shine so strongly through it that I'm just like so down to watch those movies anytime. I think that aspect is so good. And I just think Andrew Garfield is the fucking best.
The fucking best.
He's the best Spider-Man. Sorry, everyone. He's the best Spider-Man.
He is the best Spider-Man.
It's like, I love No Way Home, but when all three of them are in it, Andrew Garfield outshines them so significantly. He just steals the damn show, like the best moments. I think that movie has a lot of great moments, but the moments that are my favorites are Andrew Garfield moments. They just are. I think he's funny in a scene where he's introduced. I think he gets the deepest emotional resonance from me in his emotional scenes that have to do with Gwen and like him overcoming Gwen stuff, and like huge laugh when Jamie Foxx is like, I just thought you were black.
I thought you were black.
And he just goes, oh, I'm sorry, man.
I'm sorry, man.
It's so funny. It's so good. Oh, man, I might rewatch that movie. It's so good. all right. Fun Spider-Man tangent. I still got to do Ultimate Spider-Man, which is a slog. Sorry for anyone who's a fan of that animated series. It's rough. Having a bad time.
you know, that video will be funny time. Though, man. That video is going to be funny.
Yeah. And I think it'll do well. I think because there's enough people who like the show and enough people who hate the show. And so like it's just going to be so much. But I think that's either next, but it's such a big one that I might end up doing the movie or the game next. We'll see. We'll see what I have time for. I'm thinking I might switch into the games next. Do the PS4 game, the Miles Morales game, and then Spider-Man 2, the game when it comes out. And then after that, do Ultimate, because Ultimate will do well no matter what. So I might push it down the line a little bit.
Did you get to the episode where they crossover with Jesse?
No. I never seen Jesse. Am I gonna have to watch Jesse also for this video? Should I binge Jesse as well?
Yeah, you should watch all of
it. I'm gonna start that right now.
It won't make sense.
Start that right now.
Yeah, put Jesse on your other monitor while we record the podcast.
All right. Let's cue the theme song.
Okay, let's do it.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a Hilleberger family. But it's about the show and spies is the same guy, except he totally same. And diverse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
Yeah, that's bananas.
As rough.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. We are the podcast about cartoons that say swears, adult animation, stuff you might find on Adult Swim, Comedy Central, 7 p.m. on Sundays on Fox. You know the ones. Those cartoons that we grew up on and we love so much and we can't shut the fuck up about them. I'm Johnny. I'm your co-host. I'm one of the people who can't shut the fuck up about them. I'm here with the other person who can't do that either. His name's Tunerific Tariq. How you doing?
Feeling good. Not shutting the fuck up. How you doing?
Feeling fine.
Feeling real fine.
hell yeah. We are, of course, here to talk about Futurama, to continue talking about this newest season that has been airing on Hulu. It is the sixth episode of the season. I Know What You Did Next, Xmas. This is our first real Xmas-themed story. So the last Xmas-themed story we got in Futurama was the Holiday Xmas Special. Or like the Futurama Holiday Special, which was an anthology in the Comedy Central one. I'm pretty sure that's the only Xmas themed episode we got in all of the Comedy Central run. Before that, there are Xmas parts of Bender's Big Score. And then before that, there's only two Xmas themed episodes in the original run. There is the original, I know, what's it called? Xmas Story. And the sequel, or the follow-up, which is The Tale of Two Santas, when Bender replaces Santa for a night. Hold on one second. Let me fix my light. It's slowly falling down. Okay, great.
Purple Boys.
This is our first like canonical Xmas episode since, I guess, technically Bender's Big Score, and it's really only our fourth ever. And then the other one was just a non-canon anthology thing where like everyone dies in every story. And you know what? This one rivals Xmas Story for me. I think this is like up there. This rivals the best Xmas for me. I mean, Bender's Big Score, I don't count as an Xmas thing because I'd like on its as a whole, I love that thing. But its Xmas theming is less important to it.
Right.
If we're looking at the three canon Xmas episodes, Xmas Story, Tale of Two Santas, I Know What You Did Next Xmas, I think this episode is so strong and it like easily stands among the other two. Personally, how do you feel about this one?
I agree.
Hell yeah.
I easily agree for sure. This shit is dope.
It's so good. And like, also it's like, It kind of captures the vibes of Xmas Story. Like there's those scenes where they're all having Xmas together, though granted they're doing it in fear, you know, but they, you know, there's like the Amy, Hermes and Zoidberg, giving each other combs or whatever. And then Zoidberg, like having their hair, like there's all that stuff. I like the way that this episode does its own Xmas sci-fi time travel thing and then also has all of these really lovely family subplots happening simultaneously. I love that.
That's the kind of stuff you don't get to see that often. When it was happening in the episode, I was like, you don't really get to like. It was like Fry and Farnsworth and Qbert. I was like, you don't.
Yeah,
that never happens. That's so nice. You know what?
I meant to look this up, but also when they're doing the snowball fight, Farnsworth is he's like teaming up with a Yeti. Is it the, remember the episode where he like casts hyper malaria? The Yetiism? Yeah. Is that supposed to be the same Yeti? I think it's the same design. Yeah, I guess he's part of the family or whatever.
Wow.
No Igner. Big missed opportunity there.
Oh, I didn't really. Fuck, man. Yeah. They're making the cartoon wrong. Why are you doing that?
Well, I think there are two things. I mean, that one is like more forgivable because they've already ignored it for years, for like 13 years.
And but last week.
The one that I think people are going to be upset about is Zoidberg lack of Marianne in this one.
Yo, I'll be honest. When I was watching this one and they showed him in the dumpster without her, sad and lonely, it pissed me off. And yeah. I thought I was not going to like the rest of the episode because of how mad that made me. And that shows you how good this episode is.
Yeah.
Because I forgave it.
Him being lonely is part of the plot. Yes, it's the fact that Zoidberg. And you know what? Like, I love Zoidberg's happy ending in the original run. I love the Marianne episode. That's such a good one. I understand why they might be just choosing to ignore it because it's kind of Zoidberg's entire thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he is sad and lonely. And the reason they gave him that episode is because it was the end of the whole show. And they thought that was the end. And they were like, okay, let's give him his happy ending and he can find love and it'll be nice for him. But how do you maintain that dynamic with everyone else while Marianne's still in the picture? I think they probably could try a little harder to do it. Like, this one could have, when they're showing, they could have explained it away with a line, one line. Like, look, she's like pretty British sounding. Maybe she's out of town for Xmas with her family. So like Zoidberg's alone in the dumpster. Yep. And that actually would have been nice to get a little acknowledgement that she's still in the picture. Just like, oh, Marianne's out of town, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that, all that being said, I know people will not love that. They'll be a little frustrated about it, but it's the reason this episode works is that Zoidberg and Bender are the two who don't really have families to go back to on Xmas. And that's why they get paired up here, which I think works. Can you think of any other episodes where there's like a Bender Zoidberg pairing?
No. I was trying to while I was watching this one and I couldn't. Like you got a good grasp over the years of like the relationship, right? Of like,
yeah,
just kind of like, there's two people that like are always gonna make Zoidberg like the butt of the joke, and it's Hermes and Bender.
Yep. Yeah.
So like you understand the dynamic like
totally,
like completely already. But I don't think they've ever like, and it's amazing how well you're able to understand that dynamic, and they never focused on it before. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's just all through interaction over the years.
Yeah, and side gags like when he's leaving in, I can't remember what episode he's leaving, he goes, Zoidberg, I know it seemed like I can't stand you. That's it. he just moves on. One thing I realized is I don't even know if the other ones do this, like seeing snow on the Planet Express building itself was, I loved it. I love visually seeing new New York in snow. And I feel like even in the other Xmas ones, they don't really, do they show snow in there? I know they do it in like outside of new New York. But I'm like, I'm trying to remember if there's much snow. I guess there is. And it looks like Tale of Two Santas does have it. At least a little bit, at least in the one screen grab I'm looking at. But I don't know. I like snow. Snow is a good aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I love the snow times.
It's good vibes.
This episode also has so much good DiMaggio acting from Bender. Like this line is nothing, but it made me laugh so hard is when he gets the first card that says, I know what you did next Xmas. And he goes, okay, random. and the way he delivered it is so funny.
You know, the line I wrote is the one that's like right before that, where he's like, because it's in his stocking. He says, normally I get mail delivered to my ass.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Oh, man.
This is a good line.
I also like that they use the new development of Kiff and Amy's kids to then show an animated special that gives us the backstory for Santa that's vital to this episode's plotline. That's really smart. It's like something that they've added in this new Hulu era of the show, and they're like, oh, now we've got kids. Let's show them. That now we've got someone to teach the origin of Santa in a new way. And it was cool to see it as like the animated special. We get some Kwanzaa Bot and some Hanukkah zombie in there. And they like kind of animate it. So their character models look a little more like those old like stop motion Rankin and Bass style characters.
Man,
Coolio, the Coolio performance, Coolio. Man. He gets the. I think he's my favorite laugh in the episode. Is Carbon Fiber Timbs?
I wrote Carbon Fiber Timbs too, man. That shit is funny as fuck.
It's so funny.
That shit is funny as fuck.
Tripped him out with a pair of Carbon Fiber Timbs.
Carbon Fiber Timbs. That shit is jokes.
So funny, but it's also nice that we were told the origin of Santa before, and even though this is like an animated special. We see it now. We actually get to see Santa's origin for the first ever time. Mm-hmm. And then they add the new details that we then need for this episode with the like his naughty style. Nice thing being flipped. I also like when they have to turn it off because Santa's just like gunning people down with his with his present gun, and all the kids are like scandalized. And I love the line, I never wanted you to know Santa was real.
Yeah,
it's
the
funny, it's a great subversion of like when kids find out he's not real.
I like that too.
It's great.
When the professor decides to go back in time to fix Santa, it's like a double whammy callback, because it's a callback to Roswell It Ends Well, but it's also a callback to, I think, the late Philip J. Fry.
Late Philip J. Fry, yeah.
Yeah, where he's like, he's just still so mad that Fry fucked his grandma.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what I liked? And so, like, I guess, I think in the late Philip J. Fry, a great line. It's so funny. He goes, I only send it forward. It can only go forwards in time. That way we can't go back and do something stupid like sleep with your own grandma. And Fry says, I wouldn't want to do that again, which is great. And in this one, it's because he does go back this time. He tricked it out to go backwards. And so he goes, what does he say? I'll go alone to minimize the chance of someone becoming their own grandfather. And Fry says, these things happen. and Leela goes, no, they don't. Which is great, because that is like, it's nice to see Leela acknowledge, like, what the fuck, Fry?
What episode is that where he says, I did do the nasty and the pasty?
I think it is like in the why. I think it's in the why of Fry when they're explaining his Delta brainwave. Why he has no Delta brainwave. And basically Nibbler explains it like this happened because you went back in time and became your own grandfather. And he goes, I did do the nasty and the pasty.
He did do the nasty and the pasty.
Yeah.
It's a great line.
It's a great line. I really love, I like that they bring back this time travel ship. And you know what? It's like, I love this episode so much. I worry when they bring back something like that from an iconic episode that everyone fucking loves, that I'm like, oh, are they gonna, you know, like the same way they just did the Parasites, where I'm like, oh, that episode did not even remotely live up, you know. And granted, Lady Philip J. Fry is like an S tier incredible episode. So like, I wouldn't put this one on that level, but the way they use it is great in this episode. They just use it in such a smart way. I'm wondering if this is the one they're going to submit for the Emmy this year. or if they'll submit another one. Because it would be so funny if they just keep winning Emmys for their time travel episodes after early on they were like, no time travel, we're never going to do time travel. And then they've won two Emmys for time travel episodes now. So there is one thing that I have a slight detail issue with in this. When he starts going backwards, it's awesome that we see little snippets of old episodes, which I love. But there's one thing in the background when all the characters are changing and showing different episodes, but the background still has like a Christmas wreath or whatever. It's like Christmas decorations, and it stays on the wall as he's going back in time still.
No,
unless it's
shit.
Like on the ship, but I think it's on the wall. And I'm like, oh, that's a detail that you should have taken out every time you switched it. But there's some here. I wrote down all the time travel details. I want to talk about them. So the first time he goes back, first thing you see is earlier in the episode is them hammering stuff. So it's like literally that quick. Then the next one is the end of last week's episode where they're around the smelloscope talking about the
that's
end
what
of
I thought.
Yeah. And then it jumps so far back. It goes to Fry's dumb school from the day the earth stood stupid when he's like trying to teach everyone because they're all stupid. And then you just get a shot of Fry's head on Amy from Put Your Head on My Shoulders, which is like season two. It's all really early stuff. It's just funny how far they jumped. And then we get to see the Planet Express ship in the past with the people who used to own it for the first time ever, which was like an old meat market or something.
Right.
I love the old timey hover cars. I like that they're just like 20s cars, but they hover. You know, I like that detail.
That's
a lot.
Where it's good.
Farnsworth lands. I like we were laughing when we watched it at Santa just going cookie.
I was waiting to bring that up, man. Cookie is so fucking funny. He said it so many times in the episode. It's never not funny. Cookie.
I know. It's great. Farnsworth lands. He switches it. Jumps back in the time machine. All right. So here's some really interesting time travel details. I want to go on a tangent here.
Okay.
There's a few things. First of all, he needs to take it around, he says. And so we go back. We see all the stuff from the pilot that we've seen a bunch of times in a bunch of different episodes. The New York getting destroyed, rebuilding, getting destroyed, rebuilding. But it's in reverse this time. We see the Big Bang again, which we saw in the late Philip J. Fry. And then literally everything from the late Philip J. Fry, pretty much, we see all of those time periods when he's going back. It's like pretty specific to all the time periods from that episode, which is cool. We see the like Earth all destroyed. We see like the future. We see all the different futures, the robot apocalypse future, the one where they were like the weird little Smurfy looking guys who could figure out time travel. There's all of them. Then we see, this is interesting, we see a giant bender break through the Planet Express building and start, like, his hand goes in and grabs something and then he walks away.
Right.
This is interesting to me because the only time we've ever seen giant bender is in, like, the Anthology of Interest, which is non-canon. But there is an ad, there's a New York Times Square ad that is available. There's videos of it available, and it shows Bender getting hit with that shrink ray that we saw in the Parasites Regained one, but they've flipped it and he grows giant, and it's an ad. It's not in any of the episodes, and I'm wondering if it's a tease for a thing in the future that then this is also teasing. But also, Lord, the timeline makes no sense. Like, because it's so far ahead of stuff, because then we see the Disenchantment Gang just for a split second, which really makes no sense. Like, that just means, does that mean dream, it means Dreamland Castle is where the is
Planet
exactly
Express.
Where Planet Express is. It makes no sense, but it definitely adds fuel to the fire of the Disenchantment Futurama shared universe, which I will have a video about. I don't know if it's out yet. there'll be a video about that. But it's maybe out, maybe it's not. You know, take a look. People have been speculating about that since the first season of Disenchantment, because you see in a split second of the first season of Disenchantment, you can see this time machine with all three Fry, Bender, and the professor in late Philip J. Fry. And so now there's all this fuel to the fire about, like, okay, and especially with the timing of where it takes place in the timeline, is Disenchantment meant to be one of those more medieval looking futures that we saw in the late Philip J. Fry,
right,
rather than being far in the past? You know, ultimately Disenchantment takes place in a whole different place. It's a whole different world. It's not the world we know,
right.
You know, people are really into that stuff. And I think it's really just all Easter eggs, but it's fun to speculate and be like, well, if it does, if it can, if it would, here's where it takes place. Mm-hmm. I do wish there was a little more going on in that Disenchantment frame. It's pretty basic. It's just Bean, Lucy, and Elfo sitting.
That looks what it looked like.
Yeah. And they're sitting in the same room where we see the time machine in Disenchantment too. So there's at least that attention to detail. Yeah. Man, I love Disenchantment a lot. It's a good show. Actually, that means by the time this episode comes out, we're probably a couple days away from part 5. So
shit.
Go watch that shit. You got to catch up, Tariq.
I do.
You're traveling, right? Download that shit on your watch it while you're traveling.
With Disenchantment.
I'm rewatching right now. I like it. I think it's a good show. I just like that every time I rewatch it, I'm more charmed and enamored by the characters in the world. I like it a lot.
I do like it. Every time I start it over, I do like it more.
I think you're going to be my Disenchantment homie. I can tell. You're going to be the one. You're going to be the anti-Nick.
Yo, man. I don't know if we're going to talk about that up here, but Nick got a vendetta.
He's being so mean. He's just being mean to me.
So mean.
Man, he's got me. I'm not going to watch the Clone High revival and talk shit about it, okay, Nick? You're not going to do
it. I'm going to turn my nose away from that Clone High
shit. Maybe I will. Or maybe I shouldn't, because everyone else is shitting on it. Maybe you already feel bad enough.
You just sit back and watch.
Oh, well. Shout out to Nintendo. So, he's my boy.
Shout out Nintendo. Good show, that Clone High. I like that second season.
All right. So then we get back. He fixes everything. Here's a moment that I didn't notice until I rewatched it this time. I love Farnsworth when he invites Fry to come do Christmas with him at his place. He says at my chateau in the Bronx, which is very funny. Farnsworth calls him Uncle Fry.
He is Uncle Fry.
Which I love. I love that a lot. And then I also like Leela being like, well, he was supposed to come Christmas with me. And it's Fry splitting time between his families, you know?
And it's something to be said about the fact that that entire plot is sincere. It's not even silly. Fry legitimately spends equal time with both. It's not a corny sitcom thing where he's pacing back and forth. Oh, how do I do this? It's just, he just has a good time both places. It's nice.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
And this basically sets up the whole premise of the episode, which is that since they don't have to fear Santa coming to murder everyone, they can all freely go celebrate Xmas with their families. And we get to see all of the families' individual Xmases. They do this funny thing where they all make different kinds of turducken, which is really funny. there are unique Christmas dishes, and everyone's got their own turducken. And this sets up the whole, Fender doesn't have a family to hang out with. Zoidberg doesn't have a family to hang out with. And therefore, they end up hanging out against, even though Bender is quite reluctant. And it's great. I think it's a great, setup for the story. It's really funny.
I love them being drunk. I think everything about that is funny. I think it's funny, too, that, they're already drunk before drinking the nug, just off the fumes of it.
Yep.
Fumes of the nog.
It's great. Here's a little detail I noticed that I wanted to point out this time that I like. When they go into Zoidberg's dumpster and show him being sad because he's alone. He's got a Christmas tree made out of fish skeletons that are like all draped down like a Christmas tree. Is cool. Really good design. I like that a lot. But yeah, that's like our first ever Zoidberg Bender story. And man, it's good. It's so good. It's they decide good. Because they're so like, they're so mad that everyone else has someone to hang out with. They're like commiserating over it. They're like, well, what if we take the time machine and what are they doing? Kill Santa, right? And kill Santa so that everyone has a bad Christmas like we do. And but I love Bender being like, we could drunk drive the time machine to last Xmas, is what he says. Oh man. It's
Bender
great.
Bender has a lot of really great lines in this, especially in this half. I'm pretty sure this is Bender. We woke the meet up.
Yes.
I love that. And I love when they decide to like cut Santa up and he says, you want white Christmas or dark Christmas? It's so funny.
It's great. It's so good. Yeah, that stuff's so good. They go back and they basically just kidnap Santa, and then Santa's chasing them around and they accidentally murder Santa. Like he slips, falls on the nog, gets electrocuted, seemingly dies, and the whole rest of the episode is so like, I just like love that this episode is Bender and Zoidberg have to hide a dead body. That's the plot of this episode. And that is so damn funny to me. I love it so much. Man, it's so great. Them like just getting to know each other and liking each other. Bender and Zoidberg doing the Bender, like do the Bender.
Yeah, and Zoidberg gladly joins in. He still says do the Bender and everything. It's great.
And he ends it with a whoop 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 whoop. It's great. I love it so much. It's like, it's heartwarming. It's nice to see these characters who like both of them rarely, well, Bender gets a handful of heartwarming stories, but I do feel like compared to like Leela or Fry, they get fewer kind of heart string tugging things. And so it's nice to see them, I don't know, getting a little bit of sweet, sweet storytelling.
Yeah.
Man. I love Fry spending time with Farnsworth and Qbert. Love seeing that family time, but I really love the little scene we get when he joins Leela's family in the sewer. And we see Leela's parents, and we also see Leela's grandmother, who we first met in the 100th episode. And I love the two lines. I love him saying, you remember my her saying, you remember my grandma, right? And him saying, ah, yes, the rose of the sewers, which is, she was like, her whole thing was she was on the land Titanic, and the character's name in Titanic is Rose. That's nice. That's nice. And then and then her saying, Leela, if you don't marry him, I will. Great moment. And also it's just nice to see that like being spoken, like, oh, are they gonna get married for real? Like, are they gonna get married? Are we gonna actually do it? I love that. It's all great.
Definitely.
And then it's also just sweet that they all kind of decide, oh, we got to go spend Xmas with Bender and Zoidberg.
I like that a lot too. it's real sweet.
And it's a perfect escalation of their issue where they're trying to hide this dead body, and everyone shows up and literally in showing up alleviates their is like doing what they would have done to alleviate those insecurities that led them to go kill Santa in the first place.
Right, exactly.
In the first place. They're like, if they had just waited, everything would have been fine. And then they're of course caught in the middle of grinding up Santa's body.
But no, they don't catch on. It's like rope a little bit.
You know? God, I fucking love rope, dude.
That's my shit. That shit is hard.
Dude, rope is like a top rope. Three. I think it's a top three Hitchcock for me. I haven't watched all his movies.
Me neither.
But my three favorite Hitchcocks are, in no particular order, Rope, Rear Window, and Strangers on a Train. You seen all those?
I have not seen Rear Window. I believe I've seen Strangers on the Train, though, but I have not seen Rear Window.
Rear Window. Watch it on the biggest TV you can. Dude, Rear Window is so good.
I bet.
Also, both another Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart's obviously the guy in Rope who like kind of unravels everything. But he's like their teacher or whatever. And then he's the guy who's like stuck at his window because he's broke his leg, who's witnessing. Mm. The most amazing thing about Rope, sorry for the Hitchcock tangent, that one person who hates when we do tangents. But the thing that's most incredible about Rear Window that will blow your mind is that he crafted this incredibly detailed, intricate set where from this guy's window, you can see like six different apartment buildings through their windows. So it's like this courtyard of apartments, and you can see from his view, him, if he pans across, you can see into all these other apartments, and he coordinated all of them doing all of this stuff simultaneously so that you can do it all in a single shot. It's freaking believable. Also, it's just a great suspenseful thriller. It's so good,
man. Shit like that, I fuck with shit like that, because that's one of the reasons I like Rope so much. Because like Rope,
it's like all, you know, one.
they break it a little bit, you know, because a guy like his,
it's
like
one room,
his back could go to like the camera, so like that'll be like a cut or whatever. But totally. It's relentlessly impressive. It's a play. It's just a fucking play.
Yes, exactly. Like, the fact that it's so compelling and takes place in one room the whole time is amazing. I'm like I want to rewatch Rope now.
And the block, I'm calling it a play because it's just like the blocking, like the characters walk into the shot, like they walk into the frame. You know what I mean? It's dope as fuck.
I recently saw a screening of Dial M for Murder, which is one of his films that actually was a play that he adapted into a movie. And you can kind of tell it's like there's like only a few locations and it like, and like the story, it's really good. But the thing that I really want to see is, I don't know if you knew this, Dial M for Murder, he shot that movie in 3D. During like that specific era of 3D movies, which was like, there's a few times where 3D movies became popular, and like that was one of them. And I have never seen it in 3D. I saw a 35 millimeter print. It was just really, which is really beat up, but it's just cool to see those things on film.
That's how I saw Oppenheimer.
I might have to hit up Mikey, if you're listening to this, which you are, I know, let's do a Dial M for Murder 3D screening soon. Let's do that shit. I know you have it. I know.
And then you could double feature it with Oppenheimer, also in 35
or 70. I want to watch that in 70.
I saw it in 30. I thought it in 35. Five
days. I should probably take a look.
Do they do 70 out there for it?
Yeah, we've got some theaters, but they've been sold out through the month. It's crazy.
Lame.
But you know what I found out the other day? I was listening to a podcast, sorry to continue the tangent, where someone was mentioning that there have been some Popeyes that were in 3D. And I think there were some from the later
like the shorts?
Yeah. And I think they were from the later Famous Studios. But they're like, yeah, I can't remember. Let's see, Popeyes that
the later, like, so like the, like the shitty ones.
Well, we can get into that. a lot of people consider that when it switched from Fleischer to Famous that they got shitty. But
I'm being a little facetious. I mean, like, those are like the domesticated Popeyes. You know how like in the later Hanna-Barbera, Tom and Jerry's, like they'll be like in the house with like this modern 50s family that has like a baby. That's like the Popeye era of those. The Popeye equivalent of those.
The Famous Studios era is definitely where they got bad. But I was listening to this podcast. It's a great podcast. You guys should check it out. It's called Cartoon Logic. And these dudes are more knowledgeable about the details of all of these old animations and animators than I've ever heard anyone. Like they're like, they'll look at a shot of an old Popeye and be like, that was animated by this guy.
I love shit. I'm in this shit like that.
And one of them's an animator and one is just like the biggest animation.
I'm in this shit like that.
And they started by that podcast talking about the famous Popeyes and they're basically of the opinion that, there are still some really good famous Popeyes, but it really does eventually go downhill to the point where they're not really worth watching anymore. But they were the ones where I learned it from. They were talking about how one of them was projected in 3D. It's like a 3D Popeye cartoon from the 40s. and I want to watch that so badly. I want to watch it so bad.
Jeez. Have you ever seen, Popeye versus Sinbad? Sailor.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that I've seen a million times because I had that and I think the Alibaba one.
I had those
on VHS. I had a VHS. I had this great old VHS that I wish I still had, and I've been trying to research it to figure out what it was because I want to buy it. And it was like a collection of old cartoons that was introduced by Elmer Fudd doing a Hitchcock thing to bring it back to Hitchcock. And it was like literally like Elmer Fudd, like it was like the whole Hitchcock music and him walking up and doing the like outline of him and then turning. And it was, or maybe it was Porky Pig or Elmer Fudd. I don't know. It was someone. And it had all these different, including some Popeye cartoons and some other cartoons. And I watched that so much as a kid. And I've been trying to research what that damn VHS was because I want it. I want to buy it and revisit my childhood. But I have no idea. If you guys know, if anyone has any idea, please let me know.
That's the power of the influence, man. Yeah, you never know, man. Yeah. Somebody was like, oh yeah, bro, that's know. this, that, whatever. Send you the YouTube link and shit. Like, you know, right. You never know.
Right. Man, I'm trying to figure out what this
That's why I brought up Popeye versus Sinbad, though, because that just put that shit in 3D.
Oh, because of the 3D backgrounds, the 3D movie, backgrounds, the rotoscoping. That I mean, those guys invented everything. The Fleischers invented all of that shit.
That shit is ridiculous. Like,
I love it so much.
The fucking plane. I love that cartoon. I love looking at it. It might be my favorite short segment cartoon next to like Runaway Brain or something like that.
Okay, I found the cartoon. 1953's Popeye the Ace of Space was originally made in 3D. One of only two Paramount cartoons ever filmed in 3D. I need to watch it. I need to watch it. There says there's a fully restored 3D print in circulation for screening at 3D film events. I wonder if there is a digital version anywhere. I've heard that, you know, it's like in the era of Popeye that people say it starts to get bad, but I've heard that it's just worth watching for the 3D.
I don't know this cartoon, but I know how those look, and I am really fascinated to see what that animation style looks like in 3D because I know how those are animated. I don't think they're animated bad. Famous Studios has like this, like, first of all. These are the oldest cartoons we've ever spoken about. I think this is so funny.
Yeah, I think that's right.
This is so funny. And it's hilarious that like this conversation we landed in is like where both of us have knowledge and nostalgia. I think that's so funny. That is Popeye. I think that's so funny. But like, because they did like the little Lulus and stuff. And like their style is like really like round and like a little like kind of like it's like snappy and squishy a little bit, right. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm like, what does that look like in 3D? You know, I'm interested. And is it in color? Is it in color? Or is it in black and white?
It was 53, so it should be in color. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I don't think Famous did anything in black and white. I think that was all Fleischer.
I just found a $125 old flyer for this episode. And it says, another new Paramount sensation for your public, Popeye in 3D. And it's like this image of Popeye popping out of the screen and the audience looking with, it's kind of dope. it's pretty cool. All right. Anyways, long enough tangent.
Wait, okay. I'm sorry. I got to add on to the tangent one more because what you just said reminded me of a different Popeye cartoon that I saw as a kid. Because it was like, you know, now we talk about meta humor and how, like, you know, that's just kind of like, it's just kind of the thing now. But when I saw this as a kid, it like fucked me up. Popeye is like in danger. He doesn't have any spinach on him. And then the camera pans out to the audience in the movie theater. Does anybody in the house have any spinach? And it's a guy is like, I got some Popeye. And he fucking throws it like in camera.
So funny.
It's great. Oh my God. It's a great bit. Okay, now we can talk about Futurama.
Okay, cool. I think I might have just found that VHS that I was looking for.
Sick.
Or maybe not the VHS itself, but I think I found the cartoon that it was on it. Because I think it had that and a bunch of other stuff on it. I'm gonna find that right after this. All right, back to Futurama. Apologies to the few of you who really hate it when we passionately talk about things we love.
Gee, man, I'm so sorry.
All right, where were we? We were pretty much at the crew coming in to Planet Express while they're trying to hide the body. They basically, Bender cuts up the body, and like they've got like his body is like a cooler and his head is a punch bowl. You got all these, it's the third leg. Bender's got his third leg.
It's such a funny visual.
So funny. Does this count as them showing the hammer?
I don't know, man. That shit was looking real red rockety. You know what I mean? The only reason I won't call it hammer is because I was waiting for them to point out that it looked like hammer.
He just kicks Cupert with it, right?
Which is very funny.
There were a couple lines before they show up that I liked when like Zoidberg and Bender are kind of having their little falling out, and I think Zoidberg goes, "This is a nightmare before Xmas." That's what he calls it, and then I also love when Bender is just like, I knew this was a mistake hanging out with you. And Zoidberg goes, but we danced and murdered. he's like wistfully like, we danced and murdered.
I love when they all come in to see them. And Hermes says, we came as soon as we realized what losers you are.
Yeah, that's great. I also love... when Santa finally appears and they reveal the big twist. It's before Santa appears. Oh, it's right when Santa starts to appear and they realize he's evil still. And this line killed me. It's so perfect. Because it ties into the callback earlier is Farnsworth, when he realizes that he made him evil, he goes, I've made a complete fry of myself. It's a perfect line. And it's nice that we have the definitive answer to why Robot Santa is programmed to be too harsh. And it's because of Farnsworth. I like that. We got that origin. And it's a nice twist. That's a nice twist that's the whole reason it happened, was them trying to prevent it from happening. And then, of course, we get the best twist, the great, incredibly executed twist that as he comes in to start attacking everyone, Zoidberg and Bender appear in the time machine and kidnap him and pull him back.
Yeah.
I mentioned this when we watched it. When they go back the first time, and they're like, we're going to go to last Xmas to kidnap him. I thought it was just them being lazy with the backgrounds, especially because earlier in this episode, they were a little lazy with the time traveling background with the Christmas decoration still being there. So when they get there, you can see all of the details of the little stockings. And that includes Amy's has the three underneath for her kids, and Nibbler's has a bunch for his worms. They say for Nibbler's worms, which both were developments that took place within this season. So it wouldn't have made sense if they had gone back to the previous one for those to still be there. So when I saw those in the background, I was like, oh, they got lazy with the backgrounds. And then as it turns out, no, that was just a hint that they went, that they were still at the same Christmas. They accidentally went forward in time. They didn't go back in time. It's so good. It's such a perfectly executed time travel twist.
You heard me when we were watching, when that shit happened, I think I yelled, whoa.
Yeah, you did. It was a classic Tariq. Whoa. Oh, I loved it. It was so great.
Yeah, it was good.
And then Bender getting mad at Zoidberg is like, you took us to this Xmas. He goes, damn it, Bender. I'm a doctor, not a time machine guy.
But you know what, though? Like, because you kept the audience knows, too. You kept saying that there was something about this episode that you knew that I was going to like fucking love.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I thought that's what you were talking about. Because I loved that shit. I was like, oh, that's hard. Like, I fuck with that. But then I found out what you were actually talking about.
Should we talk about it? It's so good.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the episode ends. The episode does end. As much as I love this episode, it does end a little like unceremoniously, where it's like Bender, like it's like Robot Santa eating Amy's phone or whatever. It's fine. It's like really inconsequential. But then we immediately get a Kwanzaa-bot rap. We get a Coolio Kwanzaa-bot rap, and it's his like 12 Days of Christmas with all Futurama theme stuff. And it's funny, honestly, the best Futurama song we've had in years. We were talking about how they haven't done a great song. Yeah. It's funny. It's like, what is it? I think the line is like, it's like two, like however many buckets of nog, fries dead dog.
The fries dead dog is so funny, man.
And then the last line is, and a voice over credit for me, which is good
vibes. And then they got that fucking great shot of Kwanzaa-bot riding into the fucking, When we were watching it, right, we were watching it with everybody, I like, the second I saw that they were doing a shot with him pulling back, I said, fuck, and I like looked away a little bit, and then like, I don't think everybody caught on until it said, in love and memory, Coolio, and that's when everybody else reacted, but I was already fucking ruined by the time they did that.
They must have done that shot. They must have made that shot specifically for the in memory. They must have just gone back and animated that for him. But man, how great is it that his last appearance ends with a Kwanzaa-bot rap? He's the last person talking in the episode. Yeah.
This might be the final posthumous Coolio rap. Like, you feel me?
It could be. God, they should throw it on his Spotify.
At this point, yeah. Man.
Oh, man. I love it a lot.
Love that shit. I was crushed when Coolio passed away, dude. Like, you know, I didn't, like... I grew up on Coolio as much as any kid growing up in the 2000s grew up on Coolio. Like, he was doing a theme for Kenan and Kel. He's in Futurama. Right. He's been in Futurama for 20 years. He was he had that like reality show. And plus, Coolio, just his hair, Coolio was just iconic, bro. Like, he just, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you can't even, you know Coolio. You see him, you know Coolio. You love Coolio. Like, I still think about this one episode of Tosh.0 I saw as a middle schooler, where they have like a hologram Coolio, and then the skit ends with real Coolio being like, they paid $4,000 for hologram Coolio. Shit, they could have got real Coolio for $100. Such a good bit,
oh
man.
God, that's so
I love
good.
Coolio. Saying that to say, though, like, we talked about in terms of like this revival, like there needing to be like an episode that like justifies its existence, to be like, okay, if we don't get these new episodes, we don't get that. And that's how I feel about this one.
That's real.
It's like, it's personal for me, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, I would rather have all 10 of these just so I can get that like send off to Coolio, because I fuck with that shit. That shit is great. And
when that happened, when he died, we almost immediately got, like, David X. Cohen had come out and said, hey, we've got another Kwanzaa-bop performance coming up that we've recorded already. And I was just like, oh my God, amazing. We're going to get at least one last Kwanzaa-bop performance. And God, I could not have delivered better. It was so good. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that shit is great. That's good.
Incredible.
That shit is good, man. That shit is real good.
Yeah, I adore it. This episode's so great. It's my favorite of the season. It's just funny. Gives us incredible. It doesn't feel like they, other than like the people, other than the fact that it's a little sad that we get no acknowledgement of Marianne. It's my only note. It's my singular note for this episode. I think this episode is so funny. I don't know. Like, when you're talking about the three Xmas episodes, I think I like it more than A Tale of Two Santas, even though that one has some iconic jokes in it. That one has some great stuff in it. But, and I think it's like, it's on par with me with Xmas Story, but Xmas Story also has the great Fry and Leela subplot, where they're both alone on Christmas and Fry not realizing that like Leela's just as lonely as he is. It's one of their most important moments in their relationship,
where they
realize, they commiserate with each other and realize that they both really have each other instead of, you know, their own separate families. Although now, obviously in this one, they both have their own families in this, but it's, yeah, I adore this episode. I watched these all, the first six, I watched them all within 2 days of getting the screeners. And I remember coming out of the last one being like, I think that was my favorite. I was like, I think that was my favorite one. And I rewatched it one other time before we watched it. And watching it that last time, I was like, yep, this is a good one. And then like, just watching it with you fully reaffirmed, I was like, yeah, man, this is like everything that I loved about this seems like everyone else is loving too. God, what a good episode. This shit is
good vibes, man. Like, I can't even, I don't have a single negative thing to say. The two characters that have looked the most consistently on model this entire season are the stars. So the episode looks good.
You know what I mean? It's mostly a good looking episode. Maybe last week's was a little better, but it's good looking stuff. They've got the themed Christmas stuff, looks great. They have a lot of locations. You get Kiff and Amy's place. You get the sewers. You get LaBarbara and Hermes plays. I like that shot we didn't talk about where they limbo. Kiss each other. And I like
broken spine Dwight reappears from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, which is so funny.
He was playing the fucking like Game Boy.
Nick pointed that out, I think, in one of his videos that he was playing Game Boy before, and now it's funny because I think it was in How the West Was 1010001, he was playing DS on the like drawn care on the horse drawn carriage, the oxen drawn carriage or whatever. It was DS. So for whatever reason, they're moving up very slowly with their a DS is like 20 years old by our standards now. Maybe not that long, not that old, but DS is almost. It was 2004, I think. And then it looked like a DS Lite though. DS Lite's probably a
few. Dude, that was 04?
Think, hold on.
Get Nintendo. The fuck out of maybe, here. Maybe, yo, that maybe, was 04?
Maybe 05. Nintendo DS released globally across 2004 and 2005. The original DS. Yeah, man.
Damn, that's when I got it. I got it around the time it came out. Damn.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we coming up on that 20. Yeah, what, 18?
Yeah, it'll be something next like year. That. Yeah. November of next year will be 20 years DS. DS was a great console. Great console.
Yeah, I fucked with my DS, man. You can play both of them shits.
I still have so many DS games. I have so many DS, so many 3DS games. I mean, granted, I have a huge video game collection in general, but I didn't sell any DS games. I kept all that.
I think I lost all my DS games. I still have all those stupid miscellaneous Game Boy games that I showed you. I still got Gumby.
Oh, you did show me. That's right.
Yeah, Gumby. Yeah, I got Jimmy Neutron Jet Fusion. You know, fuck with me. Camp Lazlo, yeah. I guess. I don't know. I got a bunch of bullshit.
Oh, man. Hell yeah, dude. What a good episode. I was so excited. I literally was just like waiting to talk about this one with you. I was like, is this episode as good as I think it is? I want to talk about it.
You were right to talk it up. Yeah. Everything you said was incredibly accurate. This hell shit yeah. blew my mind when I saw it, how much fun I was having and how much I liked it. And that ending is like completely built around my personality. So, they won.
Hell yeah. Oh, great episode. Cool. You got anything else? Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, I'll wrap it up then.
Hell yeah. All right, cool. Thank you for joining us. With that, I want to thank Carrie Feek for our amazing artwork. I want to thank Jake Neutron for that theme song. I want to thank Tunerific Tariq for co-hosting every week with me. Oh, I forgot Mikey. God, I want to thank our executive producer, Mikey, who edits and co-hosts After Dark with us. Speaking of After Dark, let's thank the Cursed Ones now. All you people who help make this possible by listening every week and you know, subscribing for our bonus episodes. If you want to become a Cursed One, we got like over 30 bonus episodes. Please go check those out. They're really fun episodes. We kind of let loose a little more in those. We're just kind of off the cuff talking about movies. And Mikey is a great co-host. It's a fun dynamic with all three of us. We love you guys. We appreciate you. And also with that, thank you very much.